Remember that sound? That's how many of us of a certain age remember logging onto the internet via a telephone line and a modem, all to access painfully slow internet. All that's changed for many, with a high-speed broadband now a reality, but in some parts of rural Scotland, it's a very different story.
In one of the local villages, one of the residents there tells stories of how he gets up, and before he even has his breakfast, he starts the movie that he wants to watch that evening to download, because it has to be finished before the kids come home from school and take up all the bandwidth again.
Fairly changes your life, the whole approach to life.
Absolutely, and we can't wait for our lives to be changed the other way around, where we actually don't have to think about connectivity, we're just connected.
And that's a tale that can be replicated across many parts of rural Scotland. This morning on Out of Doors, we'll take a look at the provision of broadband, how it can transform lives, hear the frustration of not being connected, and discover how some communities have decided to get together and do it themselves. I'm Ewan McElwraith. At one time considered a luxury, now a necessity. Dr. Leanne Townsend of Aberdeen University is involved in a project to assess broadband provision and come up with solutions for connectivity.
We're increasingly moving towards thinking of broadband as an essential utility. Certain countries in Europe are thinking of it as a basic human right. So we're moving towards thinking of it as incredibly important, essential. In terms of social equity, it's essential that everybody in society has access to broadband. One pattern that we see in the UK, which is not as common throughout the rest of Europe, is this rural out-migration of people living in urban areas looking for a better quality of life and moving to rural areas. Although that changes the demographic in an interesting way of those rural areas, it's actually quite important as well because it keeps the sustainabilities of those areas going. It changes them in some ways, but it keeps them alive, it keeps them vibrant, and it keeps them going. And these are the kinds of people, professional people, often taking their businesses with them or working remotely, for which broadband is critical.
Just recently, the National Audit Office published a report showing that the UK was lagging 2 years behind our European counterparts on the rolling out of high-speed rural broadband. The UK government has revised its targets recently and states that 95% of UK homes should have access to high-speed broadband by 2017. But the National Audit Office warns that the Highlands and Islands may risk missing this target because sufficient funds haven't been obtained by the local authority. So what's the provision of broadband in the more remote parts of Scotland actually like?
It's a disaster. In fact, it's been neglected essentially by the government for 12 years. There was quite a visionary report written about in 2001 about the need for rural broadband. And so far, there's been very little action on it. You know, there have been a lot of vision statements and proposals, but nothing has happened.
The Scottish Government say they're committed to getting as many folk as possible access to high-speed broadband. But some will fall through the net, especially in rural areas. To help fill the gap, Community Broadband Scotland was formed. Sandra Holmes is in charge.
Community Broadband Scotland is a new £5 million Scottish Government initiative to support communities that are currently receiving limited or no broadband. And that's communities that at the moment are receiving less than 2 meg at the moment. And we're looking to work with communities that are unlikely to benefit from the exciting new programme in terms of delivering next generation across the whole of Scotland. The government's got a very strong ambition to deliver next-generation broadband to everyone by 2020. And as part of that process, there's something called the Step Change Programme, which is to pave the way towards that ambition. And the Step Change Programme is looking at getting next-generation broadband to 85 to 90% of the population over the next few years. Whilst obviously we want to get next-generation broadband to everyone, we have to be realistic in terms of what we're working within, and there's a recognition that there'll be some communities in the more remote, rural, harder to reach areas that won't benefit in this, at this time. And Community Broadband Scotland has been put in place to provide support to these communities to help them in the interim deliver their own community-led broadband projects.
Because you could argue these are the very communities, the very people that need broadband the most. If you're sitting in a flat in Edinburgh, you don't need faster broadband.
Absolutely. I think everybody will benefit from better access and being able to do more things online, and particularly for people living at the edge, having access to decent broadband could make will make a huge difference, both in terms of just being able to access services online, to work from home, to be able to watch TV on demand. But I think in terms of the remoteness, digital connectivity can do a very, very powerful thing to try and reduce the miles between populations and communities.
But why is it not happening? I mean, why are people sitting in remote parts of Scotland with nothing? You get the impression there's a lot of talk going on, but there's no broadband happening in people's homes.
I think the reality is just one where it's getting decent broadband into more remote rural areas is more challenging, and that's why the market isn't going there. You're working with more difficult topography, greater distances between populations, and fundamentally you've got fewer customers. So part of the government's drive to deliver better broadband is to try and support that by putting in additional funds to help deliver a programme where better broadband will reach more and more people.
At the moment, I'm heading south on the M74, and beneath me, there are literally thousands of miles of high-speed fibre optic cables carrying broadband to all parts of the country. But just up to my right is the village of Elvenfoot. Now, it may be only a mile away geographically, but in terms of technology, they're light years behind.
I'm Amanda Bouga. I'm the chair of the Glencapel and Lowther Development Group, which covers 9 villages in southern Scotland, in the southern uplands. It's extremely bad, especially where I live, in the village of Elvenfoot, which has got a very old exchange. It's actually called an Exchange Activate. And the maximum it's capable of delivering is half a meg, 512 kilobits. There are people in the village who could work from home instead of commuting every day if they had better connections. People are trying to run businesses from home. And with that kind of connectivity in the 21st century, it just doesn't work. So we knew we needed to do something.
That's kind of the speeds that many people in the cities would have had 15, 10 years ago.
Yeah, and 15, 10 years ago, we didn't even have that. So I suppose, in a way, we're lucky that we've got anything at all.
So how strong are feelings about that? Because it must be incredibly frustrating.
It's very frustrating. It's very difficult for people to continue living in the rural area when they don't have what's become basically a basic utility. There are very few people these days who are living without running water or running electricity, and that's how we actually perceive broadband. In the rural area, it's actually even more important to have good access for shopping, for banking, for all the things that we no longer have in our local communities, where we actually are being asked to use the internet instead, even for claiming benefits. People won't be able to claim benefits unless they've got internet access. It costs £4 for a single bus fare to go in to sign on. If people had internet access, that would actually save them a lot of money off their benefits.
So how far are we away from it being a utility, a right?
I think we've already seen in the government legislation that's promising everybody a minimum of 2 meg, that government certainly accepts the fact that this is essential for life in the 21st century. I think where the problem is how fast or how much speed do you actually need? And if we're looking at people who are living in the cities, who've got good connectivity, they're downloading much more data, they're actually contributing much more content themselves because the connectivity stops being an issue. And what we're seeing in rural areas is really a digital divide between those that have and those that don't. And rural people are actually not having their fair say in society because it's all been held up. They're not engaging properly in a digital manner.
A point echoed in research done by Dr. Townsend at Aberdeen University.
In terms of the communities and the businesses that we've been working with, we've now seen several who've had to move house simply because they can't access broadband, they can't do their work, they can't run their business, they can't compete with those who do have an online presence, who are able to check their emails. So it's got a very real economic, if that's the kind of poverty that you mean, it's certainly got a very real economic impact in that respect.
So communities, individuals are starting to think about the possibility of doing it themselves. I mean, what are the alternatives?
So we're looking at anything from communities which have got a farming population that are on board with the initiative, actually getting out their diggers and digging the trenches and laying their own fibre. We've seen that, for example, down in Lancashire. And increasingly, yes, communities are starting up these initiatives, sometimes using alternative wireless technologies like satellite, mesh, microwave links and so on. What you tend to find is that this is successful if you've got a very vibrant, engaged community who already understand what they're missing out on, who are keen to adopt the technology, and there have to be certain social conditions in place in those communities. There has to be a champion in the community that will get everybody motivated and moving and get this thing off the ground.
And it can be done. The village of Arnisdale is pretty remote, tucked away at the end of a single-track road, looking out across the sea to Skye. Beautiful, but a real dead spot when it came to broadband provision, until recently, when a unique community-led project made it happen, independent of government and the main broadband suppliers. Crofter and fisherman Mick Simpson.
Well, I lived without it for a long time, but I just wouldn't conceive of not having it now. It's just simple touch of a button and you've got access to all manner of things, which most of the country has, most of the world has. If I need bits for my boat, I can just get on and quite often they'll be here in a day's time. Otherwise, I had to phone someone up and find out they didn't have it in stock or I had to drive to Inverness.
What was the reaction from the community, though, when you finally got it?
I think it was just a slow dawning and of realising, you know, this is what we should have, this is what we can have, and we can do it ourselves. Because no one else is going to do it for us.
How hard was that, getting a community to act together? Because sometimes that can be pretty difficult.
There was enough in the community who knew what was going on and just did it. And then slowly everybody just sort of realised, put this little thing on the wall of your house and you've got fast internet.
The man who made that project happen is Peter Bunnyman. He has a holiday cottage in Arnisdale and just happened to specialise in broadband technology.
Well, it started probably 6 or 7 years ago, where it started like many other people who didn't have broadband, sort of going on the warpath and finding out what BT was doing and finding out what government was doing and getting increasingly frustrated. And then by good fortune, I had some colleagues in the university whose interest was in networking, computer networks and wireless networks. And they at some point said, could I help them build a test bed for their research? And I said, sure.
You bit their hand off.
I bit their hand off, and you know, I've had a house in the Highlands for ages. And that developed into this sort of pioneering community project, which was copied by lots of other communities.
Well, how does it work? I mean, you've got the map there. I mean, it was a big map of green for internet provision, or that's the aspiration. The mechanics of it, how does it work? How do you set up your own network?
Well, it's really very simple. The networks we've been setting up so far are wireless networks. And wirelesses have to have line of sight. So you have to find places that you can build relays that can bounce the signal around the side of mountains and things like this and into the village. So the first thing you have to establish is somewhere where you can get a connection into the internet. Now, we were extremely lucky because it was a research project that we could get our connection into the internet, our backhaul, as it's often called, through the academic network Janet at the college on Skye, Sebal Morostek, the Gaelic college, and they have been extremely helpful, and so the University of Highlands and Islands. And so that was very nice because we could get a decent connection. And then we simply built a sequence of wireless relays, actually a ring of wireless relays for added resilience, and brought it down into people's houses. Now, this took a lot of experiment with different kinds of equipment and different kinds of mechanical infrastructure and power supplies and things like this to make it really cheap and robust. But we did all that, and we've now have a sort of a system that has been pretty much copied by a lot of other people.
But this seems to be very much communities doing it for themselves. I mean, the word kind of guerrilla network springs to mind. That's maybe an exaggeration.
I'm not sure guerrilla network is the right way to put it. I think you have to consider this, that the costs for a centralized organization like BT or Cable and Wireless of putting up and maintaining a mast in a remote community are absolutely frightening. Communities don't face a lot of these licensing and issues of wayleaves and getting permission. So if a major telecommunications provider said they wanted to put a mast on somebody's land or lay fiber across somebody's land, the landowner's eyes would light up like dollar signs. But communities generally can get this permissions for free because everybody benefits. The landowner is going to benefit.
So it's basically rolling your sleeves up and absolutely getting a bit of community spirit and getting out there.
It's absolutely. And the contribution we've made is to make it absolutely as simple as possible for communities to do it.
What about the help available? Because, you know, there'll be people listening to this in many parts of Scotland who would just love to have an internet connection. How accessible is something like this? Where do they get the help?
Well, that's what we've done recently. We've set up an organisation called Hubs, and we are actually actively helping a lot of other communities. And if you go to our website, you'll find some details of Hubs and how to get in touch with us. And yes, we've been actively helping 20 or 30 communities around Scotland to get broadband in. Some of these are up and running. We're about 10 of them are up and running now.
Back in Arnisdale, I joined Willie McLeod in his shed, which since he's retired is now a social hub and his gateway to the rest of the world. And a very special shed it is.
It is, yes. Some lovely friends come here, play music and have a drum and sing song and, you know, it's good.
And you have your computer set up as well.
Yes, that's Professor Bunneman, Peter Bunneman, I think you met. He set it all up and we're probably one of the fastest computers in Britain. Really, very quick, like within a minute it's up and running.
So what do you use it for?
Emailing a lot of family abroad and down in Devon, Oxford, New Zealand, Beijing and China. So the Scardos, I can speak to them on Skype and keep in touch with them all the time, which is good.
What's that like, being able to keep in touch with your family and your friends?
Oh, very much. Very important indeed, yes. It's the most important thing in the world for me, is keeping in touch with my family.
What was it like, though, when you first got the internet?
Well, I knew nothing about it. I never was on computers at all till then. So I've learned from it a bit. Like, you know, I can do quite a few things now on it. And I can do photography and Skype and everything, like, you know.
What about Finlay?
Finlay's a young lad. He's brilliant. If I have any problems with Finlay, I get to sort it out in 20, 13, 14 years old. He's very, very good. He's a very clever little lad. Like, but that young people, they're brought up from when they go into primary school, they're brought up on computers, so they really know it and understand it. Like, you know? Whereas an old foggy in his 70s like me, I can do what I need to do. I find it's quite handy. Like, you know?
William mentioned his main supplier of IT to the community. He's shy, but providing a great service.
Finlay McKenzie, and I'm 14. I use it quite a lot.
What do you use it for?
All sorts of things, like homework and also personal things like email.
What about the technical side? Because there's an awful lot of people here don't know the ins and outs of the internet. Are you helping them quite a lot?
Yeah, I go about helping people with it quite often.
Well, you're constantly on demand, are you?
Yeah, most of the time.
Another community which has benefited from establishing their own high-speed broadband is the island of Egg, from where freelance project manager Lucy Conway joined me via Skype.
HepNet, which is the name of the broadband provider, is set up as a community interest company, and it provides broadband for all of the small isles and for Knoydart. And I think that's a really important part of what the service is all about. The people behind HepNet set up a broadband company that was designed for our communities at a price and at a speed and at a means of delivery that was about people on our islands. So it was, yeah, custom built.
And that provision of high-speed internet had a major impact.
It changed it massively, you know, from not being able to be connected at all to feeling like you were cut off, both geographically in some senses and by comparison to the rest of the world. But no, it was very different. All of my work virtually is online, and so unless I had a good broadband connection, it makes it incredibly difficult to do any work. So from the point of view being able to work on an island like Egg, and broadband is vitally important. It makes my life easier because it means that I can use the skills and the knowledge and experience I have in my work to work on the island rather than having to learn a whole bunch of new skills and work in a different way. So yes, I guess it does make it easier. It was great because it meant that not only did we have fast broadband, we also had broadband which was faster than anywhere else in the cities that we knew of, while everybody else was sort of struggling on allegedly sort of 8 megabit connections, which was more like sort of 1. We were up at 6, 8, 10, and now, you know, upwards of that. So we sort of piggybacked and jumped over everybody else's experience and to have a much faster connection than a lot of our urban contemporaries.
The impact of broadband provision in rural Scotland is also affecting inward investment. Chillwind is an Inverness-based company who's moving some of its management to Arnisdale.
I'm Richard Tarvis of Chill Wind. I'm the managing director here, and we supply and install wind monitoring systems throughout the UK and also for the overseas markets. Chill Wind grew up local to Arnisdale, but in a neighbouring glen where decent broadband is a non-starter, essentially. We've outgrown that location, and we're keen to keep rural jobs in the area, and moving to Arnisdale allows us to do that thanks to the Tagola project.
How nervy an operation is that? Because, you know, if it doesn't work, that's you out of business there.
It is, essentially. We've gone down various avenues so far to try and improve communication links out there. Most of them have proved to be cul-de-sacs, so it's a last chance saloon for us, really.
So how exciting was that whole operation when they came and said, actually, you could do it from there?
It was great. We almost didn't want to believe that it was possible at first. We had looked at wireless links in the past. We had thought that it was going to be too much of a logistical challenge. And when Peter proved that it could work, we were delighted.
So how's it going to work? I mean, you've got your operation here in Inverness, your operations in Wales. And how does the Arnisdale bit fit in? What do they do?
We run some project management from there and a finance function.
And presumably these are quite high-value jobs.
They are, yeah. They're high value both to the community and to Chill Wind. These are skilled jobs, and they're people with experience. They're not people that you can just pick up off the street, and we've invested in them already, so we're reluctant to let them go, and we're anxious to keep the local economy going.
But not everything is quite as simple as it may seem. There are attractions to going it alone. It's relatively cheap and it's quick. But is it sustainable? That's cause for concern for Amanda Boger in the Lead Hills.
We've basically examined all the technology options, because there are a lot of different options out there, from wireless and satellite and all these other things. We've realised that if we're doing this as a community group, the important thing is that it's got to be resilient and sustainable. We might be able to raise the money to do it once, but we certainly won't be able to upgrade it in 5 years' time. So the technology that we've chosen is fibre optic cable, and we'll be doing fibre optic to every house. The distances from cabinet or exchange in the rural area are far too long to get good connectivity. So we will actually be taking the fibre optic right into the house across the nine villages.
So does that mean you'll be able to plug into the cables that are passing half a mile from the bottom of your road?
No, unfortunately the ones half a mile at the bottom of my road aren't big enough and don't have enough bandwidth. But we will be opening what they call dark fibre and leasing that dark fibre back to a peering point where we can then get our transit onto the bigger internet. That's one of our biggest costs.
What's black fibre?
The dark fibre is fibre that's there, but it's not currently doing anything. When people put fibre in, because the digging is the expensive part, they tend to put spare capacity in there. And so what we've been doing is identifying where that is and who it belongs to, and negotiating some kind of commercial agreement with them.
So presumably that's just a case of coming to agreement and plugging it in?
It's actually a bit like plumbing or drainage pipes. Yes, the hard bit is the actual digging up the vergers or whatever to put the more fibre in. But yes, it connects very much like plumbing.
So where are you with it at the moment? How far away from the dream?
We've been working with a technical expert and drawing up network maps, so we know exactly where we want to put the fibre. We're in negotiation with suppliers. We're about to issue an invitation to tender to companies that operate in this area, and we've already identified our funding sources. So the timescales are obviously a lot longer than we want. We started this project last year and we wish it was done by now, but by this time next year it should be in the ground.
Some communities have complained about the lack of government help. How's your relationship been?
We've got a good relationship with local government and with Scottish Government, partly probably because we haven't sat there and expected other people to do it for us. We've started to do it, and then where we've needed assistance, either financial assistance or whatever, we've asked them for help. So we've actually found them very cooperative and very helpful. But I think where there's a slight disconnect is about whose job is it. I've heard the same complaint about BT. Why haven't BT given me faster broadband yet? But it's not their job.
Well, whose job is it? If it's a utility, surely it shouldn't be up to a community to do it for themselves.
I think we're moving towards it being a utility, but I don't think we're there yet. I think if we look at across Europe, the way that broadband has been put in, nearly every country has got a different model. Unfortunately, we're a little bit disadvantaged in that we've got one big telecoms provider. Whereas if we'd had more competition at the local level, then I think that we might have seen things move a lot faster.
And that concern is something that operations manager at Community Broadband Scotland, Alistair Nicholson, is well aware of.
I can understand frustration. I think everybody sees something and they want it right away and want to be part of it. But there is a danger that if you just go ad hoc at it, the systems could fail and the support won't be there and maybe miss out on being part of the main infrastructure in the future.
So you need a slightly longer term approach rather than instant gratification.
Yeah, I think it's looking at the bigger picture. I think people themselves will acknowledge once they get a service, they want it to be maintained. And if you're going to rely on it from a business point or a personal point of view, you want that service to work. And if we even think from the community point of view that are developing these schemes that are supporting it, they live in the community. And it would be very difficult to go down to your local shop or your local pub if the system's falling over all the time and the business model isn't there, or if it fails even. So it's to try and build all that into it as much as possible at the beginning.
Because there is that problem of technical ability. If it does fail, somebody's on holiday.
Well, I think that's, again, looking at the risks of the project. That's one thing in any business plan coming forward for Community Broadband Scotland funding. We look at the risks, the number of subscribers that go in, the skills that are required to support it at the different levels, from the guy that does the first initial fault analysis to fixing a piece of kit in somebody's house, to the complete network management, and risks of interference and things like that. All these things are addressed as much as possible.
Is there any time scale on this? When is everybody going to have, never mind the 85%, when's somebody sitting in a wee corner of Skye or West or Ross actually going to have broadband?
Yes, there's lots of variables.
This is a big question, I realise. Is it 5 years, 10 years, 20 years?
Yes. No, we're confident that with the right support and the right drive from communities that we can do things in a shorter time frame than that. And it needs to be recognised that communities are out there doing this now. In Lothian, there's a community broadband project delivering broadband services to customers. In Lagan, there's a Badenoch broadband project. So there is good examples where this can work, it is working. What we're looking at doing here within Community Broadband Scotland is opening up this opportunity to more communities. But it has to be led and delivered by communities, so it's not something that Community Broadband Scotland can dictate how it happens and when it happens, but just to assure people that we are here on hand to provide that support and advice and also critically access the funding to help the whole thing stack up.
Sandra Holmes. Community is a common theme in this debate. The desire for high-speed access to the world is something that brings communities together in a way that many other community-led initiatives may not have achieved.
I think probably doing other community groups and working with other community groups as well, I think that's the one thing that's been noticeable about the broadband, is it's for every member of the community. Hardly anybody says we don't need it. Everybody is in total agreement. So we've managed to have village meetings with over 100 people turning out in our very small villages because it really is important to people, if not for themselves, then for their children or for their grandchildren. But everybody's accepting the fact that this is something that needs working on right now.
And for Professor Peter Bunnyman, that bringing together of a community is highly satisfying at many levels.
I've been an academic researcher all my life, and this is the first time I've done some research where people have dropped, salmon and lobsters on your doorstep. So, that's one thing to say. The other thing is that it really does change a community, in various ways. The obvious thing is that everybody's happy because they've got broadband. They want it. I have to emphasise that what is really great is how it puts communities in touch with the rest of the world. They no longer feel isolated. But there's a second and rather subtle issue. People living in cities tend to see these remote communities as cohesive groups of people who are banding together to help themselves. When you get in there, nothing is further than the truth. there are feuds, I haven't seen a single community that is really, these ideal societies that we think they should be. But when you start a project like this, they actually come together, and it actually has a sort of integrative, I'm not quite sure what the right word is, effect of drawing people together on a project. They're all happy to help, and they're all part of it, and they like it.
Peter Bunnyman, happy with his internet and his lobster and his salmon. If you'd like to find out more about Community Broadband Scotland and how it can help your community, the link to their website is on ours. bbc.co.uk/Radio Scotland. Just look for Out of Doors in the programme section. You can email your comments to outofdoors@bbc.co.uk or get in touch via Facebook. I'll be joining Mark Stephen after 7 with another chance to hear his great programme on some of your favourite places. In the meantime, stay tuned for the news on BBC Radio Scotland.
92 to 95 FM, 810 medium wave, and on digital radio, BBC Radio Scotland.
The news at 7 o'clock. I'm Helen Place. The Democratic Unionist Party MP for North Belfast, Nigel Dodds, has been